APFT car to donate that vehicle this hour. Thanks. This is KPFT Houston.
Storytelling, and it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, along with an ensemble of gifted hosts, Dr. Hank Rubichek, our producer and the show's founder, who mentors us all, Greg Audell, appearing with Floyd the Wonder Dog, and Dr. Warren Holloman, our master of wellness. These guys are not only gifted hosts, they're also great storytellers. But our team here goes beyond hosts and storytellers. Yes, we need a production engineer and media director, and that is Tatiana Gago, whom you will hear from later on in the hour. Although he's not here tonight, we are also welcoming Chuck Vaughn, our newest intern, to the show. Together with our guest storytellers that we bring on the show every week, we celebrate the magic and power of storytelling. Stories are as old as the spoken word. Oh, yes. The origins of fairy tales are traced back to the Bronze Era, sometime around 3000 BCE. Okay, just to let you know how old I am, when I was growing up, it was BC before Christ, but now it's BCE before the Common Era, but I think it's the same thing. And who here hasn't read Chaucer's Canterbury Tales or 1001 Arabian Nights? Stories about telling stories. Storytelling is an important means of communication that goes beyond reciting a story. As a scientist, I always like to refer to the scientific studies that have demonstrated that the brains of both the storyteller and the listener are in sync during the story and are so connected that the listener anticipates which part of the brain the storyteller might activate next. I could go on and on, but let's get to tonight's stories. Our theme is parallel universes and surprise endings. We're on a journey from A to B. Circumstances shift and start you down a different path. Or not. Relax and get ready to sync up with my guests, Robert Hallett and Luis Gonzalez. Tonight, we're going to hear about surprise endings and stories that touch on dreams realized or not, the meaning of family, pets, partnerships. Ah, but our first surprise for the night is that Luis was summoned away for a business meeting. He will not be here. We'll miss you, but we'll make a mew on another night of storytelling. So, to our listeners in Radioland, let me tell you a little bit about Rob Hallett before we get started. He hails from Canada, but has made Houston home for him and his family since 2003. He describes himself as a husband, dad, to two daughters, I might add, making him the solo male in the house, oil man, hypochondriac, and always worried that there will not be enough food. He aspires to be considered a Renaissance man someday, given some eclectic interests, including paleontology, art history, rare books, which he collects, and listening to Latin jazz. Rob, welcome to the show. I think this is your first time on the radio, and you are going solo as a guest storyteller. How do you feel about that? Must be pretty exciting.
Very exciting. Hang on, Mary. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. I think you told me you enjoy having the opportunity to listen to your own voice.
I do like to sound my own voice. We have, what, 2 or 3 hours tonight?
Did you get that out there? Okay, now one thing you did tell me about your past was that your only athletic accomplishment to date involved winning the city championship in Calgary, Canada, for curling in high school when smoking was allowed on the ice. Okay, was that a surprise ending?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I just feel the need to yell, sweep. Or, yeah. It's maybe harder than you think for any Canadian listeners there. But yeah, probably, if you looked at me, you'd think it was a surprise ending.
So did you keep up your athletics and training since then?
No, not really. But, you know, as a lead-in, I mean, I was graduated in high school in 79, which meant that I was born in 1961, which means that I was a kid in the 60s. And in the 60s, you know, anyone my age just remembers Neil Armstrong and the Apollo astronauts, even watching in Canada, landing on the moon. It was a big deal. It was a huge deal. School was canceled. We all went down to the gym to watch, you know, the moon landing. And it was amazing. So, I mean, everyone my age wanted to be an astronaut. In fact, later in life, applying for jobs, people would say, well, why do you want to be a lawyer? And my answer would be, I got too big to be an astronaut.
So. That's great. So did you just leave this behind, or is this a dream that's come up again?
Well, you know, thanks for that intro. I mean, yes, I left it behind. I had to get a real job and support my family. But, you know, interestingly or not, the requirements to be an astronaut are pretty simple. And they're basic. You have to be an American citizen. You have to have vision corrected to 20/20 or at 20/20. And, you know, most people think, well, gee, you have to be like a military test pilot. And there's certainly that stream for those people to do that. But there's this wonderful vague category called payload specialist, which I'm not really sure I know what it means. But I do know it means you don't have to be a pilot. And you do experiments in the back. So you have to have a science degree. And that's really it. There's no age maximum or minimum as long as you can pass the physical. That's really what's required. The major impediment I had is being born in Canada and being Canadian, other than being 40 pounds overweight, that, you know, I wasn't going to make the U.S. citizenship requirement. So I had the geology degree from my undergrad, so it just wasn't going to happen. But I moved to Houston in the 90s, met my wife-to-be. We moved back to Canada where I had my two girls, and we ended up, as life has it, you know, back in Houston, Texas for good in 2003. And because I'm married an American, I chose to become an American citizen, proud to say. I did that in 2006, and around the same time, just coincidentally, got laser surgery. And in 2007, you know, you can see where this is going. In 2007, the Houston Chronicle advertised that, you know, front page, that NASA had decided that there was room for 7 new astronauts. And I opened the page at the breakfast table with my two girls and my wife, who immediately kind of laughed at me and says, not going to happen for you, Dad. I said, look, read on. I mean, the average age for some of these guys are 45 years old. At the time, I was in my 40s. So, you know, you can look at me, but I'm not too old. And in fact, I just became a U.S. citizen, and I have vision corrected to 20/20, and I have a science degree. So I could do it, right? I'm capable of doing it. There was the haters at the breakfast table were not buying it. And, you know, there was, you know, some sharp comments how it just wasn't going to happen and I should keep my day job. So I did what you would expect me to do. I went to work, I fired up the computer and signed on. And for any job with the federal government, I learned, whether you want to be chairman of the SEC or, you know, or an entry-level job, you sign on to usajobs.net. And I signed on thinking I'm going to spend 20 minutes doing an application for an astronaut just for fun. Well, about an hour and a half into it, I was on page 8. I was drafting an essay question why I wanted to be an astronaut. You know, I was phoning my mom to find out all the places we had lived so I could list those, all the jobs that I had. So I was committed after 2 hours. So, you know, coming towards the end of the application, it asks you, are you sure you have all the information? Do you want to commit, you know, do you want to push send? And I was ready, so I pushed send. And as soon as you do this, you get this form letter response that comes back that says basically, your application for the position of blank astronaut is now complete and is pending with blank NASA. right? So this was by far the best email I had ever received in my life. You know, I kind of looked at that and said, my application for an astronaut is pending with NASA, right? So I did what you would expect someone like me to do. I went to my computer and, you know, I pulled down every contact I had, about 3,000 people, put them all in the BCC line, took a while to do that, and drafted this kind of introductory thing saying along the lines of, not sure I'm going to be able to do my job for you anymore, because as you can see from the enclosed, my application for an astronaut is now pending with NASA, and I'll let you know what happens in the process. So, you know, my phone literally started to, you know, to blow up. The first to call, maybe not surprisingly, was my mother. I had to kind of back her down a little bit and, you know, tell her it was, you know, likely going to be long odds for me, in fact, to be an astronaut. But she was encouraging. And then, you know, ex-girlfriends, I had a whole litany of calls and emails to respond to that. And, you know, a few weeks went by and the fun kind of evaporated from this. And frankly, I forgot about it and let it go for a little bit. And Lewis, who's not here tonight, who was living through the story, would introduce me as Captain Rob, the astronaut. So I, you know, I'd have to shake my head and say, I'm not really an astronaut, you know, yeah, just for fun. I did
it's
this.
Pending.
This,
it's yeah, pending.
Pending. It's pending. And we were at a school function one night, and it was pointed out to me that one of the other dads had actually worked at NASA. And in fact, for a period of time, he was a trainer at NASA. And so I told him the story. We had a good laugh. And he said, well, tell me your background again. And I said, well, you know, I have a science degree in geology and, you know, and then I went to law school. So I could be the first lawyer in space. I kind of laughed at that. And I'm not sure what we would do in space. They'd probably throw me out the cargo door. But in any case, he said, well, you know, in all seriousness, NASA actually likes people with different backgrounds. So you just might get a call. You just might get a call. And I kid you not, that night we went home. And remember, this is 2007, so people still had landlines, right? And, you know, our phone was blinking, and I pushed the, you know, message and played it. And lo and behold, it was the HR department of NASA saying we had 10,000 applicants, and we've made a number of cuts. There's still a long way to go, but you've made the first few cuts, right? And now it's starting to get serious. And so you need to book a time to come down for a full day physical, the most invasive physical that you've ever had. And by the way, we need your permission to call all those employers you listed, including your current employer, to, you know, ask them what type of person you are and whether they would support your candidacy for the astronaut training program. So, you know, of course, I didn't know what to think. I told my wife this. My wife's reaction was immediately to run to the computer. I didn't know what she was doing. She came back and said, number one, we're not living in Clear Lake. And number two, I don't think we can support a family of four on the astronaut level one salary. So, you know, I really am not supportive of this decision. My youngest daughter, who is probably listening, her name is Bridget. Bridget kind of, you know, put her head down. And we had encouraged her that she could do anything that she wanted to do in life. She was listening to this, and she, you know, in a thoughtful moment said, Mom, let Dad chase his dream, right? So I thought that was fun. My wife just rolled her eyes and said, oh, what am I going to do, right? So, but her response was perfect. She was like, no, the dream dies here. We're, you know, this is over. So, you know, I said, well, give me overnight to think about what we're going to do here and whether I'm going to go forward with this. And it occurred to me that I may not have been the perfect astronaut candidate. You know, I get air sick. I don't like heights. You know, I'm not in perfect shape. You know, there's a lot of people who are probably more qualified than me. And I thought, you know, maybe the right way is to kind of go out my way. And, you know, so that's what I did. The next day, I phoned NASA and I, you know, said, this has been fun, but I'm going to politely pull my application. So in my mind, I can always say there for a period of time, my application was pending. And I have to say that whenever I get blue or down, I'll pull out that email and I'll say, for a period of time, my application for an astronaut was pending with NASA.
That's a wonderful story. And I have to say, if you listen to Lewis, you've been to Mars and back, Captain
right,
Rob.
Right.
Yes. But I know that feeling when when you just feel like you're ready to jump into the next life stream. So I divorced a few years ago, and yes, the divorce came as a surprise to me, and I was wondering why I had never met a dream man, and I discovered that Arlo Guthrie, who was someone I had always liked, was performing in Galveston. So I bought a ticket. Not really thought a lot about it, but I pulled out some of his old CDs and started playing them. And then, being a person who likes to search things on the computer, I started looking him up. Well, I found out that he had recently lost his wife to breast cancer. And I'm a breast cancer pathologist, you know, kind of a sign linking us. And I thought, you know, Arlo is really a nice guy. Look at everything he's written, everything he's sung. Well, pretty soon, I was in love. I literally wrote him a fan letter at the age of 58. Let's say that the previous fan letter that I had written was probably before Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. I began following his Facebook page. I planned to meet him at the stage door after the show, and I arranged with my brother to stay in his condo in Galveston. I was all ready for this. I went to the show. I had a great time. It was a great concert. I headed out to the door afterwards, and there were several other people there, and Arlo hadn't gotten the vibe. And I thought, okay, that's okay. I went back and spent the night in the condo, and I just said to myself, that's really okay. You know, you were just dreaming, okay? It's okay. It's okay. Got up in the morning, made my coffee, got in my car, was heading back to Houston to go to work. And as I'm leaving Galveston Island, I realize I am right behind Arlo's bus. I remember it from the night before, and I was just, it's a sign. It's a sign. I can change my life. And I'm following this bus, and I'm thinking about how I'm going to step up to them at the truck stop that they stop at to eat, and what am I going to say? And they put on their blinker to get off the highway, and I put on my blinker to get off the highway. And they move over into the exit lane, and I move over into the exit lane. And at the last minute, I moved back onto the I-45 traffic lane and said, you know, it's okay. I'm going to be okay. But there was a moment where it could have been me and Arlo, but I made that decision that it wouldn't be. So I know what you mean.
I love that about you. If the fact that it was Arlo just makes me like you even more.
I love Arlo. Well, have you ever had one of those moments where there's just a sign that's going to take you someplace?
I have. And in order to answer that, I need to take you back to the 80s, so 1984. In particular, shortly after I graduated from college, at least my first degree. And for those who grew up in the 80s or, you know, were at least coming into their self in the 80s, I need to remind people what the attire was. I mean, we had polo shirts with our collars up and topsiders with no socks, even in winter, and I come from a winter climate. Hair gelled back, I hate to admit it, Duran. You know, we made some mistakes in the 80s, but this story really relates to a jacket, not just any jacket, but I graduated from college and I decided I needed a wine-colored smoking jacket like Hugh Hefner, right? I did not look like Hugh Hefner, but that was kind of the look I was going for. It was a velvet smoking jacket that was wine-colored, right? Yeah, and I don't think it was available in small either, so, you know, it was not the perfect fitting jacket. And I think I spent $400 on it in 1984. And the purpose is that there's a time in your life when you do everything with people you graduate from college, and this is one of those times. And we decided we were going to Las Vegas, and there was a group of us who had gone to college. And I was breaking out this jacket for the very first time in Vegas. And so we flew down to Vegas, we checked into the hotel, and the Friday night we were going, we were going to all go out for a steak dinner and meet in the lobby in the hotel. But being a little bit early, I decided to play a little bit of roulette. So just by myself, I took a position at the end of the table. For those who don't play roulette, you know, the odds are 35 to 1. There's 36 numbers, 0 and 00. And basically, the dealer or Coupier rolls the ball, and the ball lands on a number, and that's who the winner is, right? So I'm standing there, and I see this drunk, and I can tell he's drunk because he can barely stand. He's right to the left of me. I'm at the end of the table. He's teetering back and forth, and he has a cigarette with an ash that is a complete ash of the cigarette that needs to be, you know, butt out, but he's standing there. I think I gave him a little warning, like, hey, buddy, give me a little bit of a room. But roulette requires reaching across the table to make your bet. So you're constantly, you know, arm motion, putting your bet all over the table. I was doing that. He was doing that. And in one of those, you know, intervals between rolls, when everyone is doing so, he tripped as he was doing that, kind of fell into me, both hands, face first. And lo and behold, that cigarette and that cherry ended up on my lapel. It took me a few seconds to notice this. But by the time I did, I brushed my lapel and then, you know, focused on my jacket with my new pride and joy. And to my horror, I could see this hole right in the middle of the lapel, my beautiful, brand new, wine-colored Armani jacket. So without thinking, I just pushed him hard. And as soon as I did that, I had this mental flashback thinking, you know, why did I do that? I mean, what do I think is going to happen if I push a drunk in Vegas? What response could I possibly expect from him, right? And I had this flashback to junior high and the three or four fights that I had been in that had all ended in one punch or two with me with a bloody nose lying on the ground and on the way to the principal's office. And then thought, you know, had this wonderful evening planned. I didn't really want to end up in the Clark County Jail and miss my whole evening. So all this is flowing through my mind is what my next step is. While I'm thinking this, he squares up with his fist, and I'm thinking, you know, oh, here we go. I mean, do I hit this guy now? Do, you know, what is my response? And of course, the roulette dealer is speaking into her, you know, her shoulder, saying, table 14, we have a situation, you know, security come. So this is all going downhill real bad, right? So it felt like 2 minutes. It was probably 15 seconds. You know, we're sizing each other up. And this fellow puts his hands up and kind of the universal, you know, crossing his arms, stop, like, hold on right there. Don't take any further action. And I was kind of confused what he was trying to tell me. And then with both hands, he points to the table and looks at the table. And this was not but the reaction I expected. I expected that we were soon going to be rolling around on the floor. And he points at the table. I look at the table. And the ash or the cherry that had burned a hole through my lapel, I had knocked onto the table. And, of course, no one was focusing on that. They were watching us. And it continued to burn. And it not only did it burn on the table, but it landed on number 36 and was smoldering on number 36. So he said to me, do you think that's a sign? And I kind of said, gee, I don't know. And, of course, I immediately saw my out. You know, my evening is back now, right? This is not going to end up in fisticuffs. My evening is out. And I said, it could be a sign, right? And, again, you know, roulette is 35 to 1. So I think we both took $20 out of our wallet and put it on number 36. The dealer used this as an excuse to say, are we good? We're playing again? And immediately set the white ball flying, you know, so that people could put their bets. And we stood there, you know, staring, watching the roulette wheel go around, and lo and behold, the ball bounced around and landed on number 36. So $700 to each of us. So I paid back my $400 jacket. This guy who I was about to hit now gave me a hug. Then we high-fived. He was my new best buddy, right? So I don't know what happened to him. I kind of wonder at some point, where he is now, if he's still alive. But
yeah,
you know,
I would wonder also. So I need to tell you, if you still have the jacket, maybe I can borrow it when I buy lottery tickets.
No, you know, that's what happens when you get married, is that your wife tends to throw out clothes like that. So I do not have the wine color Armani smoking jacket. Maybe someday. Christmas is coming.
I can picture myself wearing it, holding my lottery tickets while the numbers are being chosen. You think I'd have a chance?
Yep, anything's possible.
Well, I don't know. They do say that there's multiple universes and, you know, a buffalo flutters its wings in the Atlantic and there's a storm in Oklahoma. And then finally, of course, we go all the way to the level of the universe is filled with parallel universes and Schrodinger's cat is both dead and alive until some very tiny quantum event happens and Schrodinger's cat settles on a trajectory. So I'm not going to go further into that theory. I mean, okay. I did study physics, but what do you have to say about different trajectories in parallel universes? I mean, surprise endings.
Yeah, well, you know, parallel universes and different trajectories, anything can happen, you know, like the last story. And it leads me to a story that it involves pets. And anyone who has kids and girls in particular knows that you're going to have pets, right? And I'm, you know, like many dads, I can't say no.
Wait, so tell me, you had a pet that was alive and dead at the same time?
No. There's pets that maybe I wished, you know, had a quick demise. We have a dog with a diaper, but that's another whole story. But anyways, I'm not going to be able to resolve that situation. But we, you know, with a young family, you're going to go through a whole rotation of pets. I mean, we had a bunny who just recently left us after about 10 years. We had guinea pigs, and, you know, I'm not sure they were a pair or not. I don't think anyone can tell. Maybe the guinea pigs can tell, but I bet they can. But we had guinea pigs. We had fish. We had birds, and we had two dogs. We still have two dogs, one with a diaper, but I'm not going there. But at one point, you know, so bear in mind, none of these pets were mine. I mean, the dogs, you know, had relationships and bonded with either my kids or my wife, and the bunny was, you know, one daughter's. And by the way, when you get pets for kids, they promise you they're going to clean up, they're going to do all this stuff. We all know it's not going to happen. And so we ended up with a bird. And the first bird we had was a cockatiel, which was white, and its name was Mango. And this bird became my bird, right? And I don't know, maybe Mango was female. I'm not sure how you sex a bird. I'm not sure that even the vets know how to sex a bird.
Well,
certainly
Lewis
the pet
did have a story about that, but he'll have to tell us another time.
That's right. But whatever, Mango loved me, and Mango was the only pet that really loved me. And I'm an opera fan as well, and I would play opera music loud. And whenever, you know, Pavarotti or Verdi or Puccini would come from the speakers loud, Mango would start chirping, and the whole house was filled with song, and I'd try to sing along. And Mango would go up and down, traversing the perch. And I think Mango wanted to build a nest with me. I think that was the message. And, you know, I didn't really consider it. But, man, she was cute. And her cage was situated by the window so that she could see my car come up. And any other, you know, if my wife would come home, she wouldn't react at all. But when my car came up the driveway, she would start chirping with joy. And I'd hear her, you know, even as I'm walking from the garage in the house. So it made me happy. But ultimately, you know, Mango succumbed to natural causes, and one day we found her at the bottom of the cage, and that was hard to explain to our young girls, who immediately wanted another bird, right? So my wife, who was the primary caregiver and cleaner-upper of the animals, said that cockatiel made a mess, and so we need to get a smaller bird, and like a cheaper bird. Maybe let's get a parakeet. So off they went to the pet store, where they purchased a $20 parakeet. I think that parakeets have always cost $20 and always will cost $20. And I think they're also all blue and white. I stand to be corrected, but every parakeet I've seen is blue and white and $20. And my daughters named this bird Cloud. Kind of a good name for a parakeet. Again, androgynous. Who knew if Cloud was male or female? So, and Cloud was okay, and Cloud had his or her, I'll use her, you know, for lack of any specific knowledge about what sex Cloud was. Cloud had her wings clipped originally, but I come to learn that their wings grow back over time if you don't clip them. So Cloud liked to get out of the cage, and when we would clean the cage, we'd open the door or take Cloud out, and even with clipped wings, she could fly a little bit around the kitchen and exercise a little bit, and both my daughters would take her out and put her on their finger and walk around, and she quite enjoyed that. And one particular day, Cloud was out, and my daughter brought home balloons from a birthday party that I think scared Cloud, who fell onto the floor And my daughter, you know, came to us, you know, in tears, saying, "I think Cloud might have somehow got underneath my feet." Right? That was how she worded it. And Cloud looked like she had a broken leg. So my response, after being comforting as a parent, is thinking, this is a $20 parakeet, and there's a real easy solution to this problem involving another $20 parakeet, but that was not washing at our house. So off we went to, I can't remember the name of the vets, but Southwest, you know, veterinary care, what have you. And, of course, they immediately said, you need to go to an aviary specialist. Well, who knew there was an aviary specialist for a vet, you know? And again, if I would have been along on that trip, I wasn't, you know, there may have been a different treatment option, but in any case, I was at home, and this was relayed to me later. So once they got to the avian specialist, the first thing they do is they give Cloud a shot, a painkiller, I would assume, maybe a sedative, and then they did x-rays and determined that, I don't know if you call it a broken leg or what the diagnosis is, you may know, Dr. Edgerton. But
I do humans.
Yeah, okay, there you go. but the diagnosis was that, you know, it was, the leg was somehow needed treatment. So they put a wrap on it, and it was actually kind of cute. The leg was at a 45-degree angle, and the Cloud came home with a $400 bill. $400, right, for a $25 parakeet. But I'm just the dad, so whatever made my girls happy. So, you know, over the course of weeks, the diagnosis was good and the prognosis was good, and Cloud started to recover and did recover, and eventually the wrap came off and Cloud was fine. And around the same time, Cloud's, you know, wings started to grow back a little bit, and so she could venture a little bit more in the house and needed clipping. At one particular point, the back door of her house was accidentally left open, and Cloud used that moment to fly out of the back of the house. And I think Cloud momentarily made it to a tree, and, you know, my wife tried calling Cloud. I don't know if Cloud, you know, knew her name or not, but she was not coming back. And so, you know, that night she confessed and there was tears in her house. And it was bad. I offered that we could watch Born Free or something to make it better, but nothing that we could say was better. So, but it was, you know, we were thinking this is a good lesson in the circle of life and, you know, things happen, what have you, but it was still not going over very well. Well, in our little residential neighborhood, 2 weeks later, which is a long time, 2 weeks later, we started seeing on, you know, the fence post and on the lamp post a found bird, the same way that people put up notices about cats and dogs. Never seen one for a bird. Found parakeet, blue and white, right? Never seen that before. This is like just on the two blocks where we live, nowhere else. What are the chances, right? You know, 2 weeks is a long time, but, you know, what else could it be than this is Cloud has been recovered? So we tell the girls how exciting this is. You know, we're going to make contact with this neighbor who we don't know, and we're going to go rescue Cloud and bring Cloud home. So my wife went by herself because, not knowing who the neighbor was, you know, explained the situation. She was absolutely sure that she was coming home with Cloud. So she got there, she said nice things to the neighbor, walked in, took one look, and in her mind said, that's not Cloud. But what I love about my wife is that, of course, she didn't fess up. You know, she said to the neighbor, yep, that you know, I think that's the one, right? We came home, and, you know, so I think it was Cloud reincarnate, because what else could it be, right?
Well, I mean, Schrödinger's cat is dead and alive, so Cloud is lost and found,
right,
at the same time.
Right. So Cloud reappeared. Cloud, we're, the real Cloud, wherever you are, I'm sure you had a wonderful, fine life. Maybe go hang out with the Vegas guy with the cigarette.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll get back to storytelling in a moment, but I want to announce to everybody we are here on So What's Your Story? Broadcast live every Wednesday at 8 p.m. at KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville, or live streaming from anywhere on kpft.org. We look forward to our weekly show and the opportunity to be an important focus of the Houston storytelling scene. So I know we are the only live radio storytelling show, but there are other storytelling venues in our community. So, Tatiana, what's happening around the city?
Well, Mary, first let me put on my social media hat on and say something about our show. If you don't have a radio, it's absolutely no excuse for missing it, because you can listen to a stream live on kpft.org and with Facebook Live. That's on our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And to answer your question, there's definitely some important storytelling venues in and around town. Let's start with the Houston Storytellers Guild. You should join them because, you know, they're the best group to work with to start cultivating your storytelling talent. Just go to their monthly story swaps held the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. That's located Temple Emanuel at 1500 Sunset. Also, you can go to their website, www.HoustonStorytellers.org, for upcoming events and all of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008. That is 10 years, my God. And it's listed on the menu under radio program.
Hey, yeah, I love that site. I just want to emphasize that, yes, you can listen to those old shows over and over again. Or if you miss a show, you can find it there. Okay, but Tatiana, go on. Yes, I love listening to the oldies but goodies, the golden oldies, but please continue.
Well, we also post on YouTube, so you can check our program clips there. And tell us what you think about our show or suggest program ideas by visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page. And we promise to get back to you. So please be sure to share our page with your friends. And oh yes, we'd love it if you like us when you leave.
Oh yes, and for our show, if you want to say anything about our show, please put up a comment. And what's happening with our friends at the Moth?
So don't miss our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live. It's the second Tuesday of the month. And the next show is going to be on October 9th. And the theme is disguises. Do you think this is related to Halloween? Are you ready for this? Don't disguise your story. Just go for it, storytellers.
Okay, I'm not going to tell you all tonight, but there was a time when I was on a plane when they called for doctors and I happened to be wearing a skeleton costume. Let's just leave it at that.
Did they find your funny bone?
Hank, I know you're in the vicinity and I understand there's something special going on next week. Tell us what's happening.
I'm impressed with Tatiana's joke, a funny bone. I mean, that wasn't even in the script. She actually, I mean, I don't
know.
It's quite
humorous,
you're really
right?
Becoming. Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of that. Rob, I love your story. I love that astronaut story. I guess you can name that story The Sky's the Limit, right?
That's right.
Okay. Happy to, Mary. Next week, our longtime friends, Chris Gorman and Harwood Taylor, is going to shift from guest tellers to guest hosts on So What's Your Story when Dr. Jackson Shaw from UH Writing Program and Texas Children's Hospital pediatric nurse Amanda Wenger and Iris Greer Sizemore, founder of the women's group, harness their collective storytelling skills for a program about mentoring women. A show that you're not going to want to miss on So What's Your Story, only on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Hey, women mentoring women. You know, Hank.
That is up your proverbial alley. Absolutely.
Yes. I'm going to be on it. But October's also all about Halloween. Are there any Halloween treats in store?
You know, I love Halloween, and we do on this show. On the 17th, I'm going to be able to do my imitation of Dr. Loomis in the film Halloween. Michael? You know, I love that one. And by the way, there's a remake of Halloween coming up in October, just in case anybody cares. Apparently, I'm the only one, but still. And Greg Audell is going to be doing a show on Halloween night, the 31st. And both of those shows are going to have some real scary ghost stories with some terrific tellers. I'm looking forward to those. And let's see. Oh, I don't know. There's more stuff coming on, I'm sure. But nevertheless, we're looking forward to that.
Hey, I am excited, but I have to confess to everybody that I slept with the radio on and the light on for 2 weeks after I saw Psycho. So I tread carefully in these. Yeah.
Mother!
I know. I'm
going
to go home and turn
film.
The light on while
I
sleep.
I know.
Okay. But, Hank, anything you want to say about our show tonight on Surprise Endings?
Well, I'll tell you this. I love this show and Surprise Endings. You know, it's interesting because so many of our shows could be called surprise endings. That's what makes stories so interesting. But the ones tonight really do have interesting twists and turns. And we are about to listen to a story. I hope you don't mind. We've got Chris Jackson, former student of mine, who told a story about his Converse sneakers when he was in junior high. And Converse sneakers were it. And this story is going to speak for itself, but it is one surprise after another. I think we're going to enjoy it. Tatiana?
When I was on my way to ninth grade, and back when I was in school, ninth grade was still in junior high. And, unfortunately, I say unfortunately, we were not able to get new shoes for school every year. But this particular year, my mom had decided that she was going to buy my brother and I new shoes for school this year. So she told us the Friday night before that we were going school shopping the next day. So, of course, us being young boys, I was about 13, excited because it was a pair of shoes, a pair of tennis shoes that I had been dreaming about. I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking about these shoes. So we were on our way to Northwest Mall, and a lot of Houstonians are familiar with that mall. And we were on our way the next morning to Saturday morning on our way to Northwest Mall, and the only thing I could think about was coming home with my dream shoes. So we showed up at the store, the first shoe store, and we went in. And my mom always wanted us to have our feet measured before the shoes were brought out. So when they measured my foot measured a 10. So the young man went to the back of the store. I showed him the shoes that I wanted. He went to the back of the store and came back with disappointing news. He didn't have the shoes I wanted in a size 10. So my mom and said, well, let's go to the next shoe store. And we got up. Went to the next shoe store. As tradition would have it, we got our feet measured again, and unbelievably, my foot measured a size 11 this time. So they met the young man. I showed him the shoes I wanted, and my anticipation was so high, and I was so excited, and he came back with no shoes. He said that they didn't have that shoe in a size 11. So right about now, I'm beginning to feel disappointment. I'm getting sad because I'm thinking I'm not going to be able to get my dream shoes. So it was another store in the mall. My mom took us there. A young man came out again, measured my foot in the third store. Unbelievably, I know many of you in radio land not going to believe this, but my foot measured a size 12. I had moved from a 10 to a 12 in just two stores. The young man, I showed him the shoe I wanted. He went to the back, and again, he came back, said, we don't have that shoe in a size 12. So now I'm giving up because my mom thought that it was only three shoe stores in Northwest Mall. So I'm crying. I'm disappointed. And the young shoe salesman said, it's a new shoe store that opened up right down to the end of the mall near Foley's. So we went down there. We went into the store. I seen the shoes that I wanted. The young man measured my foot. And this time my foot measured a size 13. My foot had grown three shoe sizes in the matter of minutes. So the young man went to the back. He came out with the shoes. And oh my goodness, they fit. They look wonderful. And I left that store with my Converse shoes, and I know a lot of us call them Chuck Taylors. They were to us what they called, to the younger generation now, we get excited about Jordans. We got excited about Chuck Taylors, and I finally had my dream shoes the day my foot grew three shoe sizes in a matter of minutes.
That's a crazy story. Oh, Rob, have you ever had anything as improbable as your shoe growing three sizes as you're walking down the mall happen to you?
Yeah, not really shoe related, but yeah, I have had some improbable things. And this next story, is I'm going to take you back a little bit to roulette. You're going to think I'm a real gambler. I'm not. But this is really a bromance story that happens around roulette. The fact that there's two roulette stories is purely coincidental. But I need to set the stage by saying that I've been going to Vegas for 25 years. And like anyone going there, I mean, Vegas is not made by winners, obviously. I mean, there's a reason why they can afford all those casinos. In the 25 years I've been going, at least 20, Vegas has ended up with the better of me. But this is a story about one of those times when it didn't turn out that way for the casino. My best friend since college was a fellow named Johnny. We were both lawyers and best friends. I don't need to tell his last name. But Johnny loved Las Vegas. He loved it so much that he would go for 10 days at a time. His wife would let him do that. She'd meet him on the weekend. And, you know, he just wanted to gamble. I mean, he didn't really do anything else but gamble. And his game was blackjack. He loved blackjack. He never played slots, never craps or roulette. And he was a purist. And, you know, and the reason why is that the odds for people who play blackjack are pretty good, and the odds for roulette are not good. I mean, that, you know, as I explained, there's zero and double zero and 35 to one, and, you know, anyways, it's not a good chance that you're going to win. And Johnny just wasn't hearing anything outside of playing blackjack. One particular weekend, which was a short trip for Johnny, his close friends, including me, went to Vegas. And we'd like to play at the downtown casinos, which are a little edgier. You didn't have yeah. to dress up for it, no wine-colored jackets or anything. And, you know, we could make sort of more of an impact there. I remember staying up late, you know, the first night and carrying on. And then the second night, headed back, and I think we asked the host, "Do you remember us from last night?" And she said, "Sir, everyone in this casino remembers you guys from last night." But, you know, we were quite impressed with ourselves. But in any case, you know, we started playing blackjack again for the second night, and neither Johnny or I were doing very well. And after, you know, hours of blackjack, we just couldn't win a hand. It was one of those nights. So I got up to play roulette, which I like to do later at night, and practically dragged Johnny, you know, with me to play. And, you know, he really didn't want to go. And so, you know, when you play roulette, you're supposed to spread your chips out. It's kind of a risk management strategy, right? You pick your favorite numbers, you know, you get a bunch of chips, you just kind of spread them out all over and you see what happens. And we picked a table. It was just the two of us because it was late. And kind of to spite me and show me how stupid he thought this game was, he got a stack of chips. They were, you know, low denominations, but a big stack nonetheless, and put it on six. And it was black six. And I said, "What are you doing that for?" And he said, "Well, six is the birthday of my oldest son." I said, "Well, Johnny, that's a stupid bet. I mean, it's 35 to one. I mean, just throw your money away, you know, spread it out." And he said, "That's what I'm doing. Black six, this big stack." All right, that's fine. So when we were done making our bets, the dealer decided to roll the white ball, and lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, you know, black six comes up. And he gets a big payout, and he's getting all sorts of, you know, new denominations of color coming at him, you know. And I'm sitting there, you know, he's like, "You think you know how to play roulette? Look at all this money I got. You know, maybe this roulette is not such a bad thing." And the way roulette works is that they'll keep the winning kind of marker on top of your bet. And when they pull that off, you're supposed to take your bet off, right? That's what people do. And Johnny didn't do that. He kept his stack on six. So I said, "Well, go ahead, pull it off." He said, "Well, why would I do that? You know, it's worked once. It will work again. And not only that, I'm going to top it up with a bunch of these winnings and put that on top." And I said, "You know, I've seen in 25 years a number hit twice, but think about that. I mean, you know, it seems like a stupid bet, but I can't let you do that again. So I'm going to have to bet with you." Right. So, you know, I reached into my stack and, you know, and I don't think I matched him to the same level, but I put a pretty big stack on black six again. And when we were ready, the dealer, you know, let the white ball fly and, you know, kind of bounced around climatically and boom, black six. No, We're high-fiving. At this point, the pit boss is going to come over. It's late in the casino. Make sure we're not somehow cheating, you know. There's been two pretty big payouts in a row, right? And, you know, I'm thinking, this just made our weekend. You know, this is fabulous. So I said, okay, come on, let's go. You know, we proved our point. You're done. And he said, one more time. And I said, really? You think so? He said, one more time. And he said it in such a way that he was so confident, you know, having poo-pooed this whole game. I said, all right. So, you know, we each added to the stack again, and we had to, you know, color up, and, you know, there's just chips billowing off this black six, and, you know, had to tell the pit boss all this is on black six, and, you know, still no one is playing. It's just the two of us. And so when we were ready, you know, the dealer had her arms crossed. Are you guys ready now? Can I roll the ball? You know, go ahead. And I've never seen this happen before. I will never see it happen again. But she rolls the white ball, and lo and behold, black six. So we are at this point jumping up and down. I don't remember the total amount, but I think his take was enough to buy a small, you know, used car, and, you know, and mine to have a nice trip somewhere. So, you know, I grabbed him and said, we need to get out of here. Go shopping. And he's like, shopping? I said, yeah, because what's going to happen. We're going to blow all this money. So, you know, the next day, I made him go buy a pair of ostrich cowboy boots and ostrich belts. So did I. I still have them in my closet, by the way, so that we came home with something, right? So that was pretty memorable. So, you know, he went back to Calgary. I went back to Houston, and I would get these texts from him, you know, in the middle of the night saying, hey, I'm back in Vegas or some other local casino. I'm playing black six, you know. And I'd be like, good luck. So it became sort of our secret code, our number. And, I would get these calls from him, you know, whenever I'm playing black six. And along the way, unfortunately, my best friend got ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, and it can move pretty quick. And in Johnny's case, it really did. And we were fortunate that we had the chance to take him to Europe. He'd never been to Europe, so we took him to Europe on one notable trip, you know, before he died. And then I said goodbye to him in Rome and caught a flight back to Houston. And although I talked to him a few times, that was the last time I saw him. And he shortly thereafter died of ALS. And so we went to the funeral in Calgary, and it was very sad. And, but after a little period, his widow, his wife, said, well, you know what we all need to do? And we all said, yeah, we know. We're going to the casino, because that's what Johnny really loved, is the casino. And so in the back of my mind, I knew what was going to happen. I just knew it, right? And we played a little blackjack, and finally I grabbed Johnny's widow and said, it's time, follow me. And she had heard the story, but I don't think she knew where we were going. I found a roulette table that was empty, and the dealer was just setting up. And we didn't put as much money as we should have down, because in retrospect, I knew what was going to happen. I said, you need to bet with me. And we both bet on black six. And of course, you know, that roll, the first roll, the only roll, black six came in.
That's
so
amazing.
We, you know, but instead of high-fiving, we both kind of looked at it. You know, she looked at the sky and pointed and said, Johnny, I know you're up there. I know you're up there. So, and Johnny, I know you're up there too, baby. And be well, my friend. Black six forever.
Black six forever. Beautiful story and an amazing ending that black six came back again.
It did. I paid the black six, by the way, in the other Vegas trips. So, you know, every time I go, I constantly have to bet black six. I've probably given back all that money and more, you know, and never seen it since. So wherever Johnny is now, he's, you know, said, we had our fun. Now you just need to work
now you're
and
on
stop
your own.
Gambling.
Yeah, you're so, on your own.
Yeah,
page.
I'm on my own.
So I actually had a friend who had ALS recently, and it certainly is a relentless disease. I will mention his name because he has a wonderful book titled I Reach Over, Scott Chappell, and it's a compilation of spiritual correspondence on ALS, death, and living. And the proceeds go to the Muscular Dystrophy Foundation. And I mention it because I found a stanza in a poem that I thought fit our night tonight somewhat. And it reads, it's from On a Clear Day One Can See Forever. 100 billion galaxies with 100 billion stars, in perhaps an infinite number of unknown universes. And yet, our little crumb is perfectly complete. Landscape set upon a sage-painted season stage, from the burning sun down to the darkest burning core, the majestic mountains to my bare and calloused feet. Perfect before me, perfect briefly with me, perfect evermore. And that's life. There's billions of galaxies, there's billions of universes. You jump from one trajectory to another, and yet you, in spite of everything, can find your perfection.
That's really wonderful.
I really like it. Well, we live life just not knowing what might come next, and friendship's a wonderful thing, and laughter brings relief to everything. Thank you for being on the show. I really enjoy these stories, all these surprise endings. And I wanted to know, do you have someone out there in Radioland you want to say goodnight to?
Well, sure. I will say goodnight to my wife and her new haircut, and my two wonderful girls, Rachel and Bridget. Rachel wants to go to OU, and so you go, girl. Do what you need to do. And Bridget is in high school and enjoys math and science. So have a great night, and I'll see you all soon.
Excellent, excellent. That's great. OU as in Oklahoma University.
Yeah, right.
Okay, okay. I'm a UT grad, so I hear OU, and
sorry,
it's like, are you
am
sure
I going to be invited back now?
Yeah, right. Are you sure you said OU? Although I have to tell you, I'm probably the only UT student who went to one OU game. My last year in college, I said, I'm going to go to an OU game, and went up there, and I guess I'd gone out to eat and been out the night before and got to the game. And my poor boyfriend, because through the first half of the game, my head was on his shoulder and I was sound asleep. You never know what's going to happen. Okay. Don't anybody out there move, and don't dial your dial. Just stick where you are, because we have a new and exciting show following us. Coming up next, you'll be loving the very cool and very new Flash Gordon Parks here on KPFD with a show on ethnomusic. I'm excited about that. I'm going to dial in and listen to that. So make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.